welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Ziggurat and the Magic Circle.
Indeed. We're going to start off here with Ziggurat, as there is not too much in the way of spoiling, far as we can tell.
Yeah, as far as either of us have gotten. So, Ziggurat is a first-person roguelike shooter, dungeon crawl, developed by Milkstone Studios, released for Linux, Windows, OS X in October of 2014, and then was soon ported to Xbox One and PS4 in March and April, respectively.
Yeah. This has been on our radar for a long time.
Yeah.
People have recommended this.
Yeah, it's come up in various discussions. I don't think we have any like straight up names as, hey, this person recommended it to us via some forum or something, but it's always come up in conversations about any of the roguelike FPSs we've played.
Which haven't been too many, but since we both like Isaac a lot, I feel like this is another entry in the kind of trying to grab the 3D Isaac ring. Because this draws a lot of inspiration from Isaac.
Yeah, we did Paranautical and Tower of Guns, and neither of us were too impressed with either of them except for the art style of Paranautical. And hoping that this one might fulfill the mechanical needs that we're hoping for. So Gary, what did you like about Ziggurat?
I don't love Ziggurat. I do like Ziggurat. And the thing that I like about it is that it is a pretty it is a functional like works as an FPS. If you like, I had more fun thinking of this like a Serious Sam than I did trying to think of it in terms of Isaac. I don't think I like this very much, and we can talk about it. I think that like the reason, so out of the three that we've done that you named, like I would put this in the middle. Like I like this more than I like Tower of Guns,
right?
Because I really dislike Tower of Guns. I don't think I like this as much as Paranautical Activity, even though they control very similarly.
Yeah,
and just because it doesn't have this kind of weird kinesthetic, like pumping music and cool graphic style.
I'll agree with that.
That would kind of kept me going through that game despite it being not super inspired.
Yeah.
And this, I feel like the music and kind of art assets and stuff in this game are really bland.
They are really bland. And it's it even says on the Wikipedia page that other critics have likened it to Heretic and Hexen, which you mentioned to me just the other night. It's very obviously visually inspired by both those games, which is not really all that impressive of
it's
a
just not
art
that,
style.
Yeah, unique. Yeah. Right. Like I like Hexen and Heretic, but that was because it was cool to play a medieval Doom.
Yeah.
And now that we play 1,000 games or it's about running around in a dungeon, shooting stuff with a magic wand, like, I mean, maybe not 1,000, but this isn't that unusual. This is a kind of stock aesthetic.
Well, and that was literally 20 years ago.
Yeah, totally. So it's that part's not like, that's, I only bring that up in comparison to Paranautical,
right,
not as like an actual mark against the game.
Right.
It's not like, I don't think it's unfun, right? Like, it's not like I don't have fun playing it. It just doesn't do... It's so I was trying to think of like why I'm starting to think that like a 3D Isaac like might be one of these things, like a third person over the shoulder RTS, where like it's two genres that developers keep trying to bash together but are never really going to work for me. And it just kind of comes down to like what you end up doing,
right?
So like when you're playing Ziggurat, like you move really quick, you're really just kind of circle strafe. Like that's what you do in any given room. There's no space for like consideration at all, which is fine, right? Like that, but the other roguelikes have this kind of slowdown kind of period, and there are a couple of exceptions to that, but I just feel like whenever I'm in a room in Ziggurat and I am interacting with it, I'm just making wide circles around the enemies,
yeah,
so I can not get hit, and then just trying to keep them in my crosshair the entire time.
I think you're about right. I do like, the one thing I think that this game excels in that the other two do not is the actual roguelike elements. Like, it does have that Isaac feel of, oh, holy shit, I unlocked something new. Like, every run I've done so far, at the end of it, there's that, you know, corpse pile that gathers up. And every single time I've unlocked something new, something that is added to my deck, and I now have the ability to draw randomly every time I level up, or you know, a new weapon or new amulet item that I can find somewhere in the dungeon. And that I think is actually done way cleaner and way better than the other two games we mentioned.
Yeah, but like Paranautical is very shop based in this weird way. Like you get one item per floor, you know, but it's in order to actually start messing around. And they gave up on that game before it was done, I feel like.
That's true.
You know, like and in a lot of ways. Like I think they were aiming towards something like that, but something that none of the games have really, when I think about the upgrades you get in Ziggurat, right? Like I like that there's a wide variety of them. It's really hard to get excited about any of the ones I found.
I haven't found like anything they're all like super exciting.
10% less damage, like a little, like, you know, 10% more mana of this type. You move slightly faster when you get hit. The things like that. So it has that kind of like disempowering, like that's the part of Isaac that these developers are not figuring out. That's awesome. Is that like Isaac, you get an item and it has drastic changes to how you play and what your character, how they move, how they interact with the world. I haven't seen a game capture that or even come close.
The other like way I like to phrase that is that Isaac is really good at balancing overpowered. Like it wants you to be overpowered and know that that capability is possible in any given run. Like every run's a winner if you can find the thread that makes you overpowered as fuck and allows you to win. It's very unlikely that you'll find nothing and be straggling by the entire time. If you know what to do and know every crevice to search, if those threads exist in any of these games, I haven't found it. Everything in Ziggurat is too balanced.
It is very, yeah, it's a really flat difficulty curve.
Yeah.
Like I was playing on normal and it was very hard.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Cause it's, you know, you're supposed to die. And I tried to run on easy and ended up quitting because I got bored.
Oh really?
Like, yeah, it is. It's too easy then.
Yeah.
but in neither of the runs, so I probably played, like somewhere like roughly around 8 to 10 runs total, you know, to completion of Ziggurat to prepare for the show. And in none of them did I ever get anything exciting.
Yeah. The closest I've got was one weapon that was like this, target seeking soul or a skull. Mm-hmm. And that was like a cool weapon, but it's still, nothing made me feel like, oh shit, I just found something that may be crazy powerful, at least for a small period of time. Like Isaac has those waves of, even if you don't get something crazy overpowered, you get something that for the next floor or two has brought you above the curve significantly enough for you to like be real happy about it and feel super excited about where you're going in this run. And none of that has existed.
And you build, right? Like you actually like those things will actually synergize with what you find afterwards. Whereas like in Ziggurat, like the cards you get, the level up cards you get, do build. But again, the bonuses you get for those are so bland.
Yeah,
and
it's
so like
more health,
minor.
More health or more mana. Like,
yeah, slightly more ammo, slightly more health, you know, take a little bit less damage, et cetera, et cetera. Like it just, and they're also, another thing that Ziggurat does that Isaac doesn't do that I think is to its detriment is that because, you're spending more time kind of moving between rooms, I think they want the rooms to be weightier. So it's not like you go into a room and here are your targets. It's like you kind of fight several waves each time. So it's like a certain point, like it kind of becomes a little bit of a slog. There's never like a, okay, I'm dealing with this enemy. How do I deal with them? There's a little bit of that, but you're just going to have to keep doing it.
You know? Aside from the boss fights, it's always just, you know, I'm going to have to fight a few waves of these guys and they're going to pop up behind me. Like it's always the furthest point away from you that they spawn.
Yeah. And you just have to make your way there. And then the boss fights themselves are similar in that, like, they're all just like champions that spawn minions.
Yeah. And they're all circle straight fights. Every single one.
Like I'm being real down on it. There are cool things. Like, did you, a little bit when you get further into the game, you start getting into the weird kind of like weird rooms where you have alternate goals.
I've had the like challenge rooms that are just like platforming puzzles. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really cool. Like I like that as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like, there's rooms sometimes where the enemies will have like these pillars that keep them alive. Yeah. So you have to kill the pillars first. Mm-hmm. And there's one also where you have to gather a certain number of like tokens.
Oh, I haven't come across that room yet.
And it's a really tough room and you have to gather all these tokens. And even then, like, I was like, oh, that's like a cool alternate challenge, but really just once you gather the tokens, then you can kill the enemies.
Right.
Like it's not either or, it's just, you're it's always going to come down to circle strafing.
Yeah.
You know, which I like circle strafing. Like I love Doom. Like it is, you know, that's a mechanic that I like. And if you go back to the Paranautical Activity episode, I was really excited about the idea of like this being like a Doom Isaac.
Right.
And now that like, I'm just a little bit further on, I'm a little bit less impressed with just circle strafe Isaac,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it just doesn't, it's, for me, it wasn't very satisfying power wise.
I agree. I will say one thing it has over Paranautical too, though, is that at least the rooms aren't tiny little things that you're guaranteed damage in.
There's less of that. I would agree with that.
It feels a little more skill based in most regards. This is FPSs, you know, the Doom-y, Hexen-y, genre isn't really my bag anyway, but I at least can feel that this is not as cheaty as Paranautical is.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Like, Paranautical, especially once you get to like third floor and they start introducing the monkey things, where it's like, they're just going to hit you.
Yeah.
There's just nothing, you know, anything that rushes you. And this game has a little bit of that with the flaming skulls, but they're easier to deal with.
Yeah.
What would a game be like if it was this kind of setup with like the hallways and rooms, but when you actually got into the room, it was like an FPS where, like, you know, you dealt with things and there was cover. And like not necessarily like a Gears of War stop and pop kind of thing, but it was a little bit slower of an FPS.
Yeah, I think if it was, they slowed it down a bit and made things less wave-based and made enemies kind of more unique and more based around the patterns of the enemies and not the sheer number you have to deal with.
That's a big thing, because there a couple enemies I ran into have unique kind of AIs. Like, I like those the slimes.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, when you hit them, they dodge left real quick, so you can't, like, hold fire on
right.
them. Or dodge right. Like, I like those things a lot. And I ran into a couple, as I got, the furthest I ever got in the game, I started running into some kind of more interesting enemies. The problem being that, like, every time you fight somebody who's interesting, there's, like, a gnat enemy, like, that's always going to be in the room with you, that's, like, you know, distracts you from learning the patterns and learning how to fight the other things. So, yeah. Early on in the game, it's those flaming skulls. Eventually, it becomes those goddamn imps that send out the three-pronged fire thing along the floor.
Yeah, those are annoying.
And you can't jump over that fire, which, that's horseshit. Like, it should have like a hitbox, like a hurt box that goes to the ceiling, but you can't jump over it.
Yeah, I was really excited when there's that one first floor boss who has the hammer where you have to jump over the waves.
And so the bosses are randomized too. Like, I haven't run into Hammer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gonna say he's one of the first floor ones that I've run into a couple times. But yeah, he has like this hammer that he bangs on the floor and it sends out like shockwaves. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they go, I don't think they go the full distance of the room, but regardless, they're waves you can jump over. So if you're close, like, you can time your jumps and keep your aim on him. And that, you know, I was like, oh, okay, this is actually kind of neat, but,
it's like a cool Mario Galaxy trick,
right? Like,
there's those things in Mario Galaxy too.
Right. But that's like cool. The only real, there's not a whole lot of unique attacks other than, here's another thing that's going to hit you in various ways, a bullet coming at you.
There's a weird I also feel like in this game, what story stuff is there, like, obviously that's not the point, but it does a bad job of like firing the imagination, right? Like, and this is something like Paranautical Activity did well and Isaac does better, but like, you'd run into a boss in Paranautical Activity, it would be some kind of real bonkers like huge thing that was really interesting,
right?
And then Isaac has like, oh, like Mask of Infamy, that sounds awesome, and it's got this weird little ghost in the back and stuff. And this one, like, I ended up fighting the boss version of the harpies.
Yeah, and she just spawns
named
more harpies.
Amanda. Like, it's like something that's like forgotten Amanda. It's like she got left behind on a field trip or something. Like, it's not a evocative name, you know, like
right.
The Widow of Sorrow or something like that. Like, something that like contextualizes what you're doing to make you feel cool if the mechanics aren't going to make you feel cool.
Well, and all the actual story pieces you get, like, there's some rooms where the only reward is some little bit of text, right?
Yeah.
And those don't draw anything. Like, they don't bring any, I haven't seen any messages that are like drawing me to some storyline, just like some, they feel really generic, you know, Hexen-y storyline stuff, or not even storyline, but just like pieces of text that don't connect in any way. Like, I want some deeper connection to some underlying story here. Like, what was the other Minecrafty looking one that we did that was Lovecraftian and actually had some
Eldric.
Yeah, Eldric. Like, that one had actual, like, you get little hints of a overarching story as you progress through, and I don't feel any of that through Ziggurat.
Yeah, I forgot about Eldric, and I actually like Eldric.
Yeah,
quite a bit. And Eldric is slow paced. Like, you can sneak in Eldric.
Yeah,
like, I think actually now, like, thinking back on it, like, that's probably my favorite of the ones we've done.
I think so too. It's funny that skipped both our minds originally.
Yeah, I just it's a real, like, somebody's trying to get it.
Yeah,
you know, so like, somebody is trying to crack the code, and I just, it is hard. And even the ones that people like, this is the one that people like, this is a really well received game,
right?
Still, like, I don't think has it. And like, I mean, a part of it is just, it's a lot of little problems. I think that I would ignore a lot of the problems if I felt awesome at any point during it.
I think so too.
You know, and that was the thing. So
yeah, I think that I have my things that I think this is better at other games than, like, I would put this above Paranautical and Tower of Guns, but I think
we can all agree Tower of Guns is trash.
That's really bad.
I don't like that game very much.
Looking back on Eldritch now, that definitely feels like it's probably the best attempt at this combination of genres here.
Eldritch is super cool. This and Isaac is cool, and at the very least Paranautical looks cool and has a cool soundtrack.
Paranautical's look is I'm so sad now that that's connected to that game at this point.
It's there's just nothing, like, or if they had finished it, right? Like, if they continue true. It's that own guy, it's the guy's fault. Like, you know, when we talked about that on the show before, but like, this just, it feels a little too, to me, and I'm not trying to talk anybody who likes it, or you even, I'm not trying to talk you out of liking it. It's just like, and it's not like I'll never pick it up and do a run on it. Cause it is, you know, it is fun. Mm-hmm. Like, fun is to be had here. It's just not quite good enough.
Yep.
I think.
We're grading all these on the same scale of how close to Isaac draw. Yeah. How many Isaac's? Yeah. So how close does this FPS get to combining those two genres in such a great way that Isaac did with the Zelda-like? Isaac brought roguelike elements into this Zelda-like real-time experience that isn't what roguelikes typically are, and did such a quality job that it has taken over as the top game of roguelike elements in both of our minds.
Yeah, for sure. And even games that do, like, I like Nuclear Throne a lot.
That's true.
And that's actually an interesting twist on it, right? Like, they do something a little bit different, and that's a really good take on it too.
That's such a good take on it, yeah.
And it's, I think that it's like, it's a baby steps, right? Like, it's just like, what if it was faster and shootier?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's still overhead. It's still kind of, you know, there's still a lot of the same similarities.
Yep.
Here it's like the jump into 3D for this, like, I understand why it's tempting to do.
It's a hard wall to break.
But it is hard. And I just haven't seen it done correctly, I think. At least for me.
All right. Yeah. I think that's pretty much sums up our thoughts on Ziggurat there.
Yeah.
So let's move into talking about the Magic Circle.
Let's talk about the Magic Circle.
So Magic Circle is a first person mostly narrative game, but with some cool mechanics for puzzle-y and fighty stuff that you have to do a little bit, mostly revolving around reprogramming things in a similar vein as Hack and Slash was, but done way better. And it was developed by Group Calling Them Question, who is made up of former developers from the BioShock and Dishonored people. Let's see, it was released on OS X, Windows, and Linux in July of 2015. I think that's about it. Although I will also say that it has a very good voice casting, including James Urbaniak, who is Dr. Venture, and that comes through very clear.
Urbaniak.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. I will sometimes read it that way as well. And he's essentially playing Dr. Venture here.
Yeah,
which
pretty
is,
much
is part of the fun. So the Magic Circle is kind of hard to, we're going to talk about spoiler stuff and get into the important part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The part that the walking simulator is concerned with. It's not a coincidence that the developer is called Question Games, because that's, you know, it's games about games, you know, it's a little wanky. But the mechanical and the kind of setup. So like the setup is we don't really know what the player is, but you're trapped in an unfinished game.
Yeah, you're like some QC or, you know, a quality control tester or something.
Yeah. Some member of the community, and you this game is unfinished. Maybe it's kind of stuck in this like perpetual development.
Yes.
You know, like funding is running out, they keep asking for different Kickstarters. And the people who are making the game don't agree, and you're kind of caught in the middle of that conflict. And then the simultaneous story that it's telling on top of that is this idea of James Urbaniak's character, what are their names? Like, they have stupid names.
Ishmael?
Ishmael something else. Like, and then the other person's name is Maze. Like, they've got these, like,
Ishmael and Maze, and then the fangirl.
Ishmael Gilder and Maze Evelyn.
Yeah.
Coda.
Coda is the fangirl. Yeah.
Yeah. The fangirl's name is Coda something. So it's like either that's just blatantly symbolic or just kind of being goofy, but anyway, so you're kind of caught in this. And the other thing is Ishmael, Dr. Venture figure, made this game that everyone really loved time ago, like a text adventure, and everyone went crazy for it, and then hasn't been able to do a follow-up. So there's a little bit of the like games about the creative process
yes
going on in here. But the big thing we'll talk about in this first half before we get in the spoiler section is talk about the mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walk us through that, Nick.
So yeah, the mechanics are pretty cool. Pretty early on, you get introduced to this ability to basically trap enemies. And then when you trap them, you can edit them. And they have traits set along kind of certain paths. Like they're an object and they have, you know, these are my allies. These are my enemies. I move by this. I attack by this. And you start off, you find these like dog enemies and you trap the first one, you can pick them up and they move by ground. Their allies are each other, but you can switch that up and make him your ally. And now he'll follow you around and you can set him to attack whatever you've seen. And you know, they attack by melee. As you get further in the game, you'll find other enemies who have different movement types, different attack types, different special traits. And you can steal those from some creatures and apply them to others, or you can modify that enemy to be your friend. But basically, you end up with this big pool of cool traits and stuff that you can mix and match on any creature that you prefer. Some of which have innate traits based on just their physical properties. Like there's these little turtley things that have shells that you can stand on, and those end up being important mechanically because you can modify them to use them to get around obstacles and stuff, some puzzly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much it. Like, it's very similar to what Hack and Slash was attempting to do, but done way better and way simpler, but in a way that actually ends up working.
It's amazing the degree to which this is more successful than Hack and Slash. Like, we'll talk about mostly in the spoiler section. Like, this game did not 100% work for me,
mm-hmm.
But most of that's going to be in the second part of it. Mechanically, it almost totally does.
Oh yeah,
as far as like a really neat idea, because you know it's not just creatures that you're mixing and matching these elements. It's also objects in the environment.
Yeah,
and the
like you can make mushrooms attack for you and rocks fly
teleporters
around.
and stuff. Yeah. And you what it ends up being is this very open ended puzzle game.
Yeah, it's like, really neat.
You can just it's like the closest analog to it, since Hack and Slash might as well not exist, is Scribblenauts.
Yeah,
it's like a more limited Scribblenauts that takes place in a 3D world with, you know, but it's the same kind of thing where it's like, I have to get to this place. Do I want to you know, ride a flying turtle, or do I want to throw a teleporting rock?
Yeah.
Or do I want to, you know, you can do these kind of different ways of taking care of it.
Yeah.
Do I want to throw a creature over there that has a tractor beam and then hack that another creature, so all those creatures share the same ability, so I get tractor beamed over? Like, there are a lot of different ways you can get over there, and it's open.
Yeah,
and that's super cool. Like, if you go to the Steam forums, the developers are really active on there, and they people are like bringing up ways that they solve problems that the developers didn't think of.
That's awesome,
and I love that.
I need to read some of those, because that sounds great.
It dovetails awesomely with the theming of the game, which is just that, like, the game, the thematic and kind of narrative concerns of the game are like a lot of, you know, who does a creative work belong to?
Yeah,
you know, and is it the person playing it or the person who made it? And that's a lot of the conflict that's right in the front, where you know, the two major Maze and then Ishmael are arguing, you know, whether like and whether they, a lot of the puzzles you have are because they take away your ability to do violence,
right?
You know, which is kind of cool, like the idea that like games would be so much more complicated if you couldn't just hit shit with a sword.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a really cool idea that's worth exploring. But yeah, like mechanically it is just, and it also blends these kind of different worlds really well. There's kind of two different iterations of this follow-up game that they're trying to make. One that was tried, you know, being made in the early 90s, which is clearly a System Shock analog, like that the graphics look like System Shock 1.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then the other one, which is this fantasy world that doesn't have any color to it. Like, it's just this cool sketch.
Yeah.
Kind of cel shading looking thing that never got to the color stage.
Yeah, so both of storyline wise, both of these games are his attempts at a follow up. Ishmael's attempts at a follow up, but the first one was
in the game. The name of the game is also the Magic Circle.
Right. Yeah. Both games are the Magic Circle, essentially. But the space based one was sort of the first follow up, and there was even the fans had actually seen some of the footage of it and such, but it had gotten canned and never released to the public.
Yes.
And now they're working on and never actually releasing, because they keep fighting over the mechanics of this fantasy based one.
Yes. Yeah, and that's really like all you can say without getting into stuff that you should play.
I think so too.
I think, I mean, like I said, I'm gonna enumerate some problems I have with like the narrative of the game. Mm-hmm. But I think it's worth playing. I think it's really neat.
You it's know, short too. It's not very long, and it's a fun
hours.
Experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's worth your time. I think it's got a hearty recommendation from me, even if the deep storyline stuff, which we're going to compare a lot to the Beginner's Guide, doesn't quite hit the same points.
Yeah, I don't think this is as good a game.
No.
As that by really any means. Like, I don't think it like it tries too many things. And that's like, that's the only like non-spoilery thing. Like, it tries to talk about too many things without actually
saying
having a real clear thesis on any of them, I think.
I'll agree with that. Let's stop there with talk about though, and we'll get into more of that with spoiler section. Let's do some quick admin stuff. You can always find us on twitter.com at Comrade Podcast or on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade. Mm-hmm. You can also send any recommendations via either of those means and by the contact form on duckfeed.tv.
Indeed. If you like the show and want to support the network in general, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick us a dollar a month gets you episodes a little bit early. $2 gets you access to our Slack channel, which is a cool, fun place to hang out and chat with people about games and chat with us about the stuff we talk about.
Totally.
And then the biggest thing you can do if you actually want to, you know, actively help out the show is do things like tell people who you think, you know, would like it, that they
or rate
like
and review us on iTunes.
Yeah, those things are huge.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we're gonna take a quick break here, a little ditty before we get into some spoilery stuff about the Magic Circle.
All right,
Gary, let's talk about it a little bit. So first of all, the main kind of narrative here is that you run into the main character from the previous iteration of this attempt at a sequel. What was his name again? I forget.
He's the boss, or like boss or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite boss, but I don't remember what it
is. No, he calls you boss. What is his name? You run into this like weird presence in the computer.
Right.
That has the voice from Thief, like the gravelly voice from Thief. and it's kind of like everywhere, and it's very antagonistic. Like, it refers to the people who created the game as the gods and wants you to bring them down, more or less enlist your help in doing so.
At the same time, the studio has hired someone from the fan community, Coda, who's taken over for Maze Evelyn as the primary creative director of the game.
Well, she still works for Maze. Like, Maze is still there, but Maze wants to be fired. And there's this whole subplot that I hate that is about like Maze's likeness rights and whether, you know, Dr. Venture having this power over her, because if she doesn't do what he says, he can sell her likeness rights to someone. And it sounds like it's trying to be like biting satire, but it falls super flat.
Yeah.
I don't get, like, the whole idea is like Maze used to be a multiplayer, or like, you know, well-known multiplayer character,
pro gamer,
you
know,
but it doesn't work, and I think that like that's, it's supposed to be funny, like that part of it, and I did not find it funny at all.
I think that's probably the weakest part of the whole thing for me, is like I don't care at all.
I didn't really care about Coda very much either.
No, and like, Coda comes out in the end is terrible anyway, so.
Like, I mean, well, everybody's kind of awful. I think that Dr. Venture is awful in a way that's at least sympathetic.
Yes.
And that has nothing to do with necessarily his character, it more with the writing, where he got a little bit more development. You know, because there's multiple things going on with him, right? Like, there's this idea that, like, so one of the ideas the game wants to explore is this idea of the creative act as a surrogate for having children.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of works. I think that's like, it's sad, and him talking about it, you know, the opening is really great and chilling. This whole, like, we open on a wedding ring. Like, my dad used to spin his ring, and I worried, like, would mom disappear if he lost it? Like, this whole, like, you know, would I disappear? Like, this idea of, like, this progeny and, like, having kids and stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
And then this idea of having your best work behind you, you know, like not being able to follow up something that you're called a genius for, and that going to your head.
That's what I think is probably the strongest point for me.
I think that's really resonant and cool.
Yeah.
But this thing with Maze, where she wants, like, she's trying to say something about, so again, when I talk about this game trying to say too many things, those are two ideas. It's trying to say something about game, you know, people who make games, like Maze represents the player who plays the game, who just wants action and doesn't want story.
Right.
And kind of player freedom. That doesn't really go anywhere and is not that interesting.
Right.
The whole subplot with Coda, or main plot, is this idea of like who owns a game when it's done. And if that's like, that's not something that's not worth discussing, but I feel like the game is too mean spirited in that respect. It reminds me of, did you ever see Lady in the Water?
No, I didn't.
It's not a very good movie.
That was a Shyamalan, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's you know, and kind of the, what he drew a lot of heat for is he has a character in it that's a movie critic, and he just portrays him to be a stupid asshole. It's like, well, I just like tearing apart other people's work. You know, and because Shyamalan was sick of hearing that, you know, people didn't like The Village or whatever,
right,
and just put a character in his work that represents a straw man version of like what he hates.
Right.
And that's what Coda feels like to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it doesn't, what is the, like, yes, communities don't own a game, but there's just no, they're not, there's no, not treating her with any sympathy at all. The same sympathy that they treat with Dr. Venture's ideas.
Yeah. And there's a weird kind of, imbalance there too. Like, she's also brought in because she's so familiar with the work and because so much, she's like a fanfic writer basically, who's done good yeah. stuff with the same setting as the original game that this whole thing is supposed to be a sequel to, and then they just tear her down for that, for this, like, the same things. Like, if you thought she had good ideas for what the future of the game would withhold, then why do you dismiss every idea she has?
What's the premise there? Like, if the premise is Dr. Venture can't make the game because he's got this creative he's frozen creatively.
Right.
And then when they bring in somebody who cares about the work, they're plotting to undo him and steal the intellectual property from the thing, and also can't do it, because when she finally gets what she wants, it's a disaster and she can't make the game,
right?
You know, and can't do it because the fan community are just a bunch of idiots and they just try to destroy this thing that they like because they don't know how to really program. Like, it has this, it's very defensive in tone. I have this like weird sense that was like those guys like just had such a bad time and just really needed to vent, and it ends up being just kind of cruel to me.
It seems that way to me too.
Like, so at least that, those subplots.
Yeah.
So what are we at? Like, five things the game is trying to be about? The game is also trying to be about like the joy of creation. There's all these parts about Dr. Venture, you know, we can't remember the name of the character, but the thing that lives in the machine who recruits you, saying like, shouldn't he be taking some joy in this? You should take some joy in this. And then with the really brilliant ending that we'll just say what happens in a minute, they really capitalize on that.
Yeah.
And the ending is great, but the game leading up to it wasn't about that. Like, it just like, the A and B don't follow each other. It's really weird.
And you're talking about the final ending,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first time I thought it was going to end, that really works for capping off the Dr. Venture character in a really great way.
Yeah.
And we'll say what actually happens, but like,
sure, yeah,
just getting the, like, what does this, so it's just, if you have a game that like just is trying to say so many things, right? Like, this is definitely a game that's about something. This is an art, you know, this is an art game, question games. Like, it is, you know, that is the idea. it needed to focus.
Yeah.
Like, way more than it did, because I would say like a good, you know, 66% of the things it's trying to say, like, it didn't express well enough or explore well enough, or are just not really worth saying.
Yeah.
Like, all of the parody stuff with the, like, oh, esports people are concerned with their image or something like that. Like, who are you call? Like, it feels like punching down. I was talking to Cole about it, and he that's the phrase he used. It's like, that's totally what it is.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. The stuff about that and the stuff about the fan community feels like punching down.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so weirdly misplaced among some of the other things that they, I think, actually do well. So
it's
weird. So I want to talk a little bit more about like comparison and stuff, but let's get through
what actually happens.
Yeah, the story real quick, and then we'll have some more to talk about at the end.
The first two thirds of the game are you making your way through the actual mechanical part.
Right. So you get led on by the previous protagonist who's helping you to take control of the game as a player from the inside. And that's where all the programming components and stuff come from, which is really neat, as we expressed. But you eventually get to, is there anything before the E3 demo? I don't think there really is.
You
right?
just kind so, of make your way further into the game. It's eventually going up and finding, capturing the sky jerk or whatever he's called.
Right.
Sky dick.
Yeah. Sky God or what? Yeah. You bring down that's actually Maze up there, I think, right? You take down Maze from the inside, and then there's a you get inside of a computer that is going to be the computer used for a E3, but they call it E4 tech demo.
There's all that stuff. They didn't. I feel like they didn't need to do that.
Yeah,
like, they don't say really Kickstarter, weird. They say like Kickbacker or something like that. Like, why not just say Kickstarter? You're not going to get sued. Like,
it doesn't mean anything.
Like, I don't think that would have been a problem.
And so once inside there, you see them quickly trying to craft together this demo, so they have something to show off. And then you manage to take control, get inside, and the point of it is to ruin this demo in front of everyone. And you get to use all the abilities that you've collected from within the game up to this point.
Which is pretty cool. Like, that's a fun, like, you just get to, it's a playground, right? Like, you can,
yeah.
I didn't actually look on, I couldn't find anywhere online because almost nobody's written about this game. It's really weird. There's not a lot out there, but I was trying to find, like, is there a way to, like, what happens if you do nothing? Do you get an alternate ending?
Yeah.
Like, what happens if you don't do things? What did you do?
I don't think you do. Well, I made a flying shooting baby.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed pretty creative at the time, but then I looked online and a lot of people did that.
Of course you did. Yeah. Like, that's what you're going to do. That's, yeah. that's gotta be the thing that everyone does. Yeah. I think the only thing you can do to actually change the outcome is to make the baby fight back.
Yeah.
That's pretty much anything you do to make the baby fight back is how you ruin the game. And from what I read, there is no alternate ending. There's no other endings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think basically you just play around until you get that.
Okay. And then once you have something there, that's when the timer actually starts.
Yeah.
So what happens in he becomes a laughingstock, and then you get this alternate kind of view screen where it's what it looks like when you're viewing outside of the computer.
Yeah, motion capture, like through Kinect, Xbox Kinect.
It's weird that, like, from inside the machine you see things that way. I never really quite understood what I was in this game or what, you know, because it's like it seems like you're more than just a playtester. You can look out from a thing onto a, you know.
I think that's supposed to be the other protagonist has hacked the computer, okay. And now you're getting the visual PlayStation feed from a Kinect
thing.
Yeah.
But the kind of whole idea here is Coda performs her coup and says, like, hey, you know, we have all these fake laser guns, but maybe somebody in the community is actually angry enough to shoot you. You shouldn't risk that. Which, like, that's a terrible message. Like, that,
yeah,
that's like,
fuck?
Like, you shouldn't, you know, be scared of us because maybe somebody is crazy enough to kill you. That's like Gamergate shit. Like, that, yeah, sounds like, you know, oh, I wouldn't do it, but you should still toe the line, you know?
Yeah.
And then he gives this, like, really amazing speech where he's just kind of, you know, he gives up the game and then starts talking about, like, his problems with his major themes, like with the idea of him being, you know, losing control of this thing and not knowing how to follow up and stuff. And that's really effective.
Yeah. His speech is great. Like,
and
that's
James Urbaniak's a treasure.
Like, oh, yeah.
He's so good.
He's really good. And speaking of totally tangential, but you really need to watch the season of Venture Bros. So far.
I
it's
know.
Great.
I would like to.
Anyway, so yeah, this amazing speech goes down where he gives up the rights of the games to Coda and the community.
Yes.
And then you're fast forwarded to Coda inside the game world, where everyone who's part of the game so far, like everyone outside the game who's a developer on it, has been represented by these robotic eyes. So you're looking over the world from a huge bird's eye view, and Coda invites all of the fan community to come in. So a whole bunch of these eyes with names, you know, usernames, probably people related to the game's original development, pop in, and she's there giving them a big speech about this game is now ours. We're going to create this world in our image, and releases everyone to begin work, and they just fuck
well,
everything
they don't,
up.
Dr. Venture pops in. At that point,
oh, does
says,
he?
Yeah, he says, like, whoever the first person to actually make it is the person who will win the real rights.
That's true. Yep.
So it's just kind of like, you know, showing him being a dick at the end. And then also they can't stop and see through that ruse. They immediately just start comically, like, knocking everything upside down and just, like, destroying everything.
It's so dumb.
It's really, like, what is the emotional beat here? Like,
I hated that scene.
What is the point of this subplot? Like, and it also, I don't even like there being this, like, dickhead tag on the end of the Dr. Venture part, because, like,
no.
You know, you've done a lot of work to make me, like, sympathetic to him.
Yep.
Why do this?
He should have ended on the stage. Like, that was a 100%. Good ending for him.
So, after that happens, and I thought the game was over. I was like, oh, that's stupid. And then, but the actual ending is pretty neat, where the whatever the name of the god inside the machine who's been talking to you says, like, they can't finish it. Some weird sci-fi spiritualism about who he can't make it out into the world unless you actually make a game that gets good enough review scores.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
To get shipped.
It's dumb.
It's real silly, but the cool.
He needs to get shipped. The idea of the game getting actually released, and he has chosen you to be the person to do it.
Which will allow him to escape. What does that mean? What is he?
He doesn't actually mean escape. He just means he needs to get out into the wider public. He's just been stuck on these dev computers in this old build that's never going to get released.
Yeah, for sure.
And,
it's a weird thing.
He uses dumb language. Yeah.
And then the game turns into this, like, totally different system that it didn't use for the first part, which I think this is really effective. It kind of opens into a very rudimentary kind of game editor, and you make a level, and it is the satisfying thing about this is that it things that you know about game design from being a fan, and if they would just shut up with the fan stuff and just let this be the message, because I think this was inherent, will help you succeed at this, right? So like, right. As somebody who plays games, like, you know that if you want someone to explore, you have to put treasure somewhere, and you know how to pace fights and stuff, and just kind of your natural instincts of putting together a level here will like serve you pretty well.
Yeah.
And then the game will play through it, and you get to listen to their feedback. And it's kind of like kind of cartoonish, and the game you make, like, speaking of Hexen, like, you make like a kind of like a, just, I made a very generic medieval game, and it wasn't that that interesting, but it was, you get judged based on like, oh, when like music picks up, or when you pace combat. So like, if you put enemy density enough to where somebody almost dies but doesn't die, that's desirable. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And if your game gets good enough, you can ship it and beat the game.
And when he's playing through it, and it's the guy who's playing through it the first time, he's giving you like feedback the whole time, like, ooh, I like that the music changed right here. Oh, secret stuff. Like, you know, all the little beats that you want to hit in a well-developed game, basically. In a very basic form, like, you're just making sure the enemies are spaced out right, and that you put stuff in all the hidden crevices and things like that. But that basically, the game ends with you shipping it, but then you're left with this desktop, and the only thing I really saw, there's like, you know, you can watch the credits and stuff from there, but you can also watch Coda play through your game.
And she is a final humiliation. She has to recognize that the player was way better at making the game than she was going to be.
Yeah.
And she, you know, ends up really loving it and giving it the same review score that, you know, your algorithm predicted you would get. So it's just kind of a final kick to that character that they don't know what they're doing. you know, you can do better than this fan of the world could do their entire time. Which, again, is trying to say something, but I don't know if it's worth saying, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I do like the voice actor, at least, and her, like, fandom of what you've created. Like, oh my god, this might actually be the game that I've been waiting for so long. Yeah,
it's impressive the way that it reacts to what you're doing and stuff. Like, it all feels pretty natural. The other thing that happens in there is there's a little wrap-up to that Maze character where, like, you can listen to a voicemail message from her, and she will... say that she wants back on the team because everyone's just slobbing your knob. Like, at the end of the game, like, you were the real Starfather. everybody was wrong except for you, developers of BioShock 2. So you get those little kind of endings to those stories, and the idea of like game making as a game is great. I know that you don't have a Wii U. Mario Maker is really fun.
I've seen plenty of it to be like, oh man, that's really great. Like, I fully appreciate what it is, even if I haven't had my hands on it personally.
It's very fun, like, just on its own. Like, people were just like, oh, it needs to have a better community kind of algorithm to sort levels and everything. But that's not like, that would be great, but the point of Mario Maker is not to sit down and just play levels. The idea is the game is making levels,
right?
Like, that is the game of Mario Maker, and like, it's amazing. Like, it's really, really fun and satisfying, and this isn't quite as good. Like, you don't have the rapid iteration that you have with Mario Maker, but for something that's just kind of a coda of a walking simulator game, it's really impressive and cool.
Yeah,
and I would love to see that as a mechanic, like a more arcadey like take, like a shorter, more simpler take on game making as a mechanic. I think is super cool. I would have loved to see the hacking thing developed in a bigger game, like, you know, and that's not perfect. Like, there's all these, you end up just with a bunch of creatures following you, and it's a pain in the dick to sort them. There are all these kind of problems with that, but it's would be amazing if they developed that fully as a thing to focus on. And again, like, focus is the problem. Like, it is not anyone, you know, many of these things that this game wants to deal with are worth dealing with. They just didn't concentrate on one enough to develop it fully.
Yeah, I agree.
Would we talk about the beginner, or go ahead and say what you were gonna say, sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to do one thing that I would have said earlier and forgot to, which is my favorite thing about this game was putting the flying stat on the turtle, and then using all my stat upgrades to make his speed maxed out.
Oh yeah.
And then just using the waypoints to fly around everywhere.
Yeah.
And just super fast. It was really fun.
Yeah, that's super fun. To do that. Flying around on a flying turtle is great. Yeah. I ended up having tons of fun with teleporter shit too.
Yeah, because that was pretty cool.
That hive mind upgrade where it gives everybody the same power. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of weird shit with that.
Yeah.
I just imagine if that was just the idea of the game, and there were like three times as many aspects.
I thought the exact same thing. Like, I was like, this should be a way longer and more fleshed out game itself. Which, you know, this was not, but what they did with it is better than what other games have done with it.
100%. Like, yeah, I mean, Hack and Slash is one of the worst games I've ever played.
Let's shut up that game some more. It's fun.
And this is a really good game. It's just, I feel like even if it had failed in its message, if the message was not as antagonistic, I would have felt better about the emotional stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if it just kind of didn't hit, it'd be like, oh, that didn't really hit. But the fact that it feels actively mean at points.
Yeah.
Like, interrupted it for me. Like, this game makes a really interesting comparison piece to The Beginner's Guide, because they are both about the creative process. And this one does kind of neater stuff mechanically with it, but it's not a personal story.
Yeah, there's no heart to it. And you said that Mackie wasn't really into Beginner's Guide because he said this game had pretty much explored the same concepts.
I end up disagreeing. Like,
yeah, I completely disagree with that.
The reason why it didn't work for Bob, like, and I want to put words in his mouth, you can find his review online, or the reason why The Beginner's Guide didn't, for people, is that he says that it's too obvious. It just spells out, it tells you the theme too many times, and there's no subtext. And then I was like, okay, I really want to play the Magic Circle, because if that's how he feels about this game, which, like, that worked on me, I wonder what this is going to be like with subtext.
Right.
But I think that even, like, I'm capable of a deep read of something. Like, I'm familiar with subtext.
Yeah.
What I think is the actual message is something just so much worse and kind of nastier.
Yeah.
That it, even with the subtext, it doesn't make up for it just being kind of a story and a perspective that's not really worth, like, or something I want to spend a lot of time with.
Right.
You know?
Ish's story itself, I think, is a good exploration of that idea. Like, what he has as a, former god of this community for creating an amazing story and environment, and then his inability to correctly follow it up. That's really interesting, and what they explore in there is good. Could have been fleshed out more and would have made for a better focus for a storyline instead of all these tangential things that didn't go anywhere. So I like what happens with Ish. I like
Me too.
His struggle.
It just didn't. It never felt like that was what the game was about.
No. Yeah, I agree.
And, like, that's the thing with the Beginner's Guide is it's really personal. And, like, you could say, like, oh, it is. It's a little too direct. But, like, something that I'm realizing is that, like, I don't mind direct if I think it's, like, well written and well performed like that. Like,
agree.
The Beginner's Guide gets a lot out of just kind of emoting, and it reminds me of and again, this is just the end of the podcast where I'm putting words in other people's mouths, so I'm sorry for that, but, like, Cole's big thing with Soma was that he felt like the characters stated the theme too much, and maybe that's just something that doesn't bother me that much if it's a theme I care about and it's articulated in other ways, like, mechanically well enough, then maybe I don't care about that.
Yeah,
because it's hard for me to call that an incorrect criticism, because both those games really put their ideas right on their sleeve. But
right.
I'd rather have one idea fully expressed directly than 1,000 ideas imperfectly expressed indirectly.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I get where they're coming from. Like, discovering a theme in something, like digging for that deeper meaning, can be really deeply rewarding and can, like, super raise the status of what that thing is to you, but yeah, I don't mind it being direct if it those two games in particular are so well written and so well fleshed out in the theme that them spelling it out for me doesn't take it away from me,
and the theme is just very resonant with me.
Oh yeah, both those themes are great.
I am very scared of losing my sense of identity. I am very scared about what happens when I run out of creative juice. I am very interested in whether I can know a celebrity or know a creative person by their work.
Yep.
What I'm less interested in is, like, the likeness rights of esports people and fan communities. Aren't they the worst?
Yeah.
Like, no, actually, I think that's kind of great, and you should probably be a little bit grateful that, like,
I'm literally cringing right now, like, putting it in such blunt words is like, why did they put those in the words they did? It seems so nasty.
It is, yeah. It is just, it's very strange.
Yeah.
And it ended up, like, not touching my heart at all, because it doesn't, because it feels too defensive. It feels like it's not vulnerable enough.
Right.
You know, it's lashing out, and, like, that's something I'm never gonna, like, appreciate that much. I don't need characters to be likable, right? Like, the guy in The Beginner's Guide is doing wrong, you know, like, he's doing something wrong and he's making us complicit in it. And then, you know, the main character in Soma has a lot of flaws as well. Like, it's not about being likable, it's just about being, like, open or vulnerable in a way that, like, you know, we're living that, and it's tough balance, but it is it's just like, that is why those games I end up liking more than this. And I was really, I would never have believed if you had told me that, like, oh, I would end up liking the Magic Circle mechanically, but not, you know, story-wise, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That doesn't sound like me.
Right.
Especially for, like, a walking sim type game like that. I'm just kind of surprised that's how it worked out.
I am too.
But still worth playing. And like,
yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I still like it. Like, I had good time with it. I had good time. but I could have better time.
Yeah. Could have better time.
Yeah. It didn't make me want to cry. Like, it didn't make me self-reflect. I didn't come away from this being like, boy, I need to question what I think about these things.
Right.
You know, and that's a great thing for a game to do.
Absolutely.
I think. But, you know, what do you think? If you're listening, and I don't know. Hit us up on stuff.
Yeah, on things. We're available. Yeah. Come chat with us. All right, this one's running pretty long for a comrade up, so let's cut this off here. Thanks for listening to us, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
See ya.